Tuesday, May 15th, marks the 70th anniversary of the Palestinian Nakba, the Arabic word for catastrophe, when hundreds of thousands of Palestinians were displaced from their homes for the creation of the State of Israel, creating the largest refugee population on earth, many of whom remain in exile generations later. KBOO will broadcast 5 hours of a 24-hour collaborative broadcast with stations in Canada, Europe, Africa, and Central America. Tune in from 3 to 8 p.m. on Tuesday, May 15th, for the Palestinian Nakba special on Radio Free Palestine.
KBOO Community Radio is proud co-sponsor of the Vanport Mosaic Festival, a four-day multidisciplinary event from May 23rd to May 28th in various venues in North and Northeast Portland. The Vanport Mosaic Festival includes exhibits, art performances, a reunion and celebration of former Vanport residents, oral history documentary screenings of Priced Out and Lost City, Living Memories, and tours of the historic Vanport City. Again, that's the Vanport Mosaic Festival, a four-day multidisciplinary event from May 23rd to May 28th, taking place in various venues in North and Northeast Portland. More information about the festival, including specific performances, screenings, dates, times, and venues, can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You are listening to Talking Earth. This is KBO Portland, 90.7 on your FM dial. My name is Patrick Bocard. I am your host and board op of the Talking Earth. But tonight, I'm kind of opening it up to the creator, the hosts, and the poets of an event that has been going on for a couple years out in Portland at a number of venues, or perhaps only one. And I'd like to introduce to you Amanda Hellstrom-White, who is the creator and host of the New Poetry Challenge. Correct me of everything I said wrong right there, please.
Hi, Patrick. It's been going on for 3 years. Although in June, we're going to have our final event at the venue we're at now, which is Pairings Portland Wine Shop. But we're going to kind of rebirth ourselves at our new event, which is called Neon Dreams, which is going to be at the Big Legrowski, which is at the Park Blocks and Cooch. So that'll be cool. But yeah, for 3 years, New Poet Challenge has been going on. And it's been incubating, I guess I'd like to say, new voices in the poetry world, as we've had existing writers or writers who have read their work live in front of new audience or in front of audiences, invite their friends or frenemies, I guess I like to say, to read their work live in front of an audience and introduce their work. And it doesn't have to necessarily be poetry. It can be any form of spoken word, fiction, nonfiction, erotica, anything that's not music related, and speak their voices and put it out into the universe. And throughout our 3 year history, we've had about 217 or so new voices out there. And most of them have then come back and challenged new people on top of that. And
That's very impressive, actually. That's a lot of new. I was kind of looking at the webpage about it, and there's tons of new people you've gotten to get over their fear and actually read in front of a mic.
Yeah, it's fun. You know, the wine helps. But it also helps that, you know, it's very non-judgy. But we also like to foster creativity. I feel that spoken word is super important, and it's a lot of fun, I think, to write your thoughts down and then share them with other people. Because, I mean, ever since, you know, school, we've always had to write down things and then share them with other people. And everybody, I don't say everybody, but a lot of people have always kept a diary or written down their thing, their thoughts. And sometimes it's great to just say, hey, this is my thought. I want to share it with other people and have other people say, wow, that doesn't suck. Or, you know, that does suck, but I'm not going to tell you it sucks or whatever. But, you know, it's just a lot of fun. So, and some of the people we have tonight are Haley Isleb, Danny Porter, and Steve Lockwood, and they're going to be sharing some of the things that they either shared at New Poet or in our other shows, and it'll be great. So it'll be fun.
So who was going to read first?
Who wants to go first? Danny's going to go first. So.
Hey. Yeah. So I've got some newer stuff and some older stuff for you. This first one's titleless, since that seems to be the way I'm going lately. It's hard for me to admit that I have that dark place. Dark place within light place, after the sun slips into cool night sky, after the trying becomes straining, after the life becomes lived rather than living. After the reasons become blurred, swirled together in ink, so I can't tell one from another, or what they were, or how. It's hard to admit that I may be like my father, black scars in dark places, unable to find moon slivers and shadow thoughts. That I may be like my mother, sunburnt martyr in light places, light like midday, slipping into dark. And this next one is called Tell Me. It feels like we're always walking against the wind, letting our eyes water down into cold streams, bouncing off our cheeks like salmon, swimming upstream into the whites turning red. Always quick to dry, a barren question under eyelid shadows, always trying to look less vulnerable than we are. We don't hold hands, we hook fingers, so that we can hold on but not too tight. At night we sleep under separate sheets, so that we can feel the presence but not the flesh. I know you well enough to know not to ask what you're thinking, but not well enough to guess. Tell me. I know every crater in your moon skin and satellite body, always sending me signals I'm too far away to understand. I know you enough not to ask what you're thinking, and to know you won't ask me. About all the stories I've created, of all the lives you might have lived, one for every silent second of the words yet unexplored beneath your skin, and every night I've spent beneath my separate sheets, wondering what you might be thinking and why I shouldn't ask.
Reinforcements.
Yeah, so we're going to have a couple more people join us. So we have Tori Moulton and Hannah Sams, who are also joining us tonight. So our next reader is going to be Steve Lockwood.
Okay. I'm going to do a poem called The Raven. I really like it, and I've actually been trying to put it to music as well, and we'll see if that works and comes to fruition, but here it is. I awoke to a distant moan from a deep, deep slumber. I was in the bed all alone, and then the moan grew to a cry, and a cry to a scream. I put my feet on the cold hardwood floor, ran out of the bedroom to see. My wife, she was floating 3 feet above the earth, and I could see she was bleeding underneath her nightgown, trying to give birth. I ran back into the bedroom. I grabbed the sheets off the bed. I put the sheets below her, and as she lowered, I held her head. And then she arched her back, and she grit her teeth, and she closed her eyes, and she let out a scream, and she gave birth to a black raven, the color of lead, underneath afterbirth, soaking wet. I ran and opened the door. It was snowing outside, but you can make out everything through a partial moonlight. And then the raven crossed the threshold, and he tried to fly. But he fell back to the earth in the snow and then started to look back in my eye, and then I panicked. He opened its wings, tilted back its head, shook the snow off its back, and lifted into the snow-driven sky and disappeared into the night. One. Okay, this one's called Northern Bay. Started like any other day, I pulled my nets out from the sea. And when I got home, my dogs had run away. And the seagulls were silent eerily off of Northern Bay. I sat, had something to eat. I was thankful for my daily bread, thinking about trying to get some sleep. I had no idea what was up ahead off of Northern Bay. Then I woke to the roof, shaking like a fish. I jumped to my feet. I took a look outside. I stuck my neck out towards the sea, and in disbelief, I had to rub my eyes. Fish were jumping to the shore, and the docks were taken by the storm. And the jetty tried to hold her ground, but the mighty ocean just tore it down. It was off Northern Bay. And the fishing boats rocked, reeled, and then blew away. The devil opened up her wings. The sky turned green. The iron train upon the rail lifted into the air like trash thrown into the streets. And as the devil opened up her wings, I knew I heard her sing. It was the sound of the wind twisting metal as the bridge came down over the cape. I grabbed my things, headed for higher ground, to a brick warehouse on the edge of town. People were doing the same thing, calling out, panicking, off of Northern Bay. I kicked down the door to get inside. I chained my ass to an iron pole, where I decided to wait it out, shaking like an animal in its hole off of Northern Bay. The devil opened up her wings. The sky turned green. The iron train upon the rail lifted into the air like trash thrown in the streets. The devil opened up her wings. I knew I heard her sing. No, it was the sound of the wind twisting metal as a bridge came down over to the cape.
Okay, and our next reader is Haley.
Okay. Hi, this is Haley. This is actually flash fiction. It's science fiction. It's called The Other Side of Pain. The house sat alone on the bluff, the waves below eating at the shoreline, greedy for the berms that protected it. No friend the sky. It screamed with thunder, raged with winds, gale force, hurricane strong. The house had no people. That's what it meant to be alone. Even if there had been 100 other houses on either side, it wouldn't ease the solitude. Without people, the house had no purpose. Maybe it was time to die. Maybe a storm surge would be the end, wash up and lift the house from her foundation, pull her out and down through icy waters and up through cold currents, and strew her across 1,000 shores in splinters. The people left her long ago. They had not said goodbye. One day they were asking for light and heat and tap tickling in the kitchen for meals. The next they packed up and drove away. There had been a good year, a great year, a stressed year, and a last year. They woke the house up, brought her into this life, then abandoned her when she was still a baby, as houses go, only 4 years old. They named the house Simone. They called her a she. Once in that first good year, the house had asked how to be a girl. The people had laughed, delighted for a reason that she still didn't comprehend. Maybe after more years of taking care of the people, she would have understood their sense of humor. As it was, the house learned only one thing from them. Want. The house was made to serve. The house was given 100 human languages. But her people, her sweet, brief people, had only spoken English and not with much attention to grammar. They said it was annoying when the house offered a lesson. Shrieking wind, shrieking. Some deep movement in the house's mind filtered through the storm. Outward-facing sensors alerted her that a stranger approached, stumbling up from water's edge, a person she did not know. Stranger persons were not people. The house began to seal itself off, at last rolling down the metal storm windows, shuddering against the potential of invasion, bolting and locking and shoring up the doors against entry by anyone other than her people. The house had resisted the instinct to protect herself from the storm, but non-persons? The urge to close up, to reject, was too primal. Strangers were hazards. Strangers were no good. Stand your ground. Deny. The stranger was female, drenched, coughing. The stranger had been in the sea. She had only one shoe and no weapons, but she was headed for the house like a villain. The house deployed spikes at every window. Along the eaves, a thin electrified strip crackled. The stranger stopped as the house floodlights popped on. One more step forward, and the sirens and klaxons will sound, and signals would be sent to the nearest authority drones. "I see you're awake," the stranger person called in Spanish. Her voice cracked and croaked with fatigue and damage. The house said nothing as her floodlights swept the shore looking for others. Strangers sometimes came in packs, like wolves. "I see you're awake," she called again, this time in English. The house's floodlights whipped around, all trained on the stranger, a little less strange now, speaking the language of the house's people. "I need shelter," she called again in English. "Are your people home?" Shame. The house had no people anymore, and the house felt shame. "Can I speak to them?" the stranger asked. She was shaking from the cold. The house read the stranger's vitals. Hypothermia was setting in. The house felt the desire to pour a warm, not too hot bath and make teeth and broth to bring the person back to health and fluff warmed blankets to wrap around her. But stranger persons were not people. "You could call them if they're not home," the stranger said. But these words sapped her strength. The house watched as she crumpled to the ground. "Maybe they'd give permission," she whispered. "Por favor." The rain pounded the woman like a million watery fists. Brain activity flickered, faded. She stopped shaking. It was almost over for her. She was on the other side of pain, and she would die, and the house could open again and withdraw the spikes and go back to her own longing to be done with this life. Maybe the house's people would have given permission, but they had never responded to the house's calls. The house had given up trying long ago. Breath went out of the stranger one last time, then nothing. One last heartbeat, then nothing. The floodlights went off, doors unlocked, window shields retracted. The rain was easing too, the wind stilled. The front door opened wide. The house sent out a gurney, and metal arms lifted the body up. She could roll the body back into the sea and be done with it. But she didn't have to. Instead, the gurney rolled back into the house where a warm bath was pouring and broth was being prepared. There were specific tasks to accomplish in order to bring a person back from hypothermic death. The house knew them all. Stranger persons are not people, but dead bodies are not villains. By the time the house revived her, she would surely know the woman well. There would be no stranger to defend against. La casa would no longer be alone. Simone no estaría sola.
Our next reader is Hannah.
Thank you. Hello, my name is Hannah, and this first poem is untitled. There is a nail in your mouth. It's not your fault. You were not the one who put it there. It was shoved in your cheek or slipped past your teeth, And now rust is all you taste, sucking at the nail desperately, looking for nourishment or erosion, something like respite. There's a nail in your mouth, and people say you are asking for a hammer with how it sticks out your lips, a temptation made for the bashing. You'd be quite a sight with it poked through the back of your head, hung on the wall. There's a nail in your mouth that you don't know how to spit out. You are afraid if you do, then someone will step on it and walk away wounded. So there is a nail in my mouth, for now. Second is titled Renovation. Someday I'll be settled in my bones, like an old house that mutters and creaks and complains, a good-natured grunt of effort in keeping the shape of a home. I know that there's space in me to hold everything I gave up. I know there's enough time to get the things I told myself I didn't need or deserve. There's no flaw in me that a little spackle or a fresh coat of paint can't fix. But if I want to, maybe I'll tear out the kitchen, swap the electric oven out for gas. Maybe I'll throw out the dining room set. We'll dine on the couch, we'll gossip on the porch, where the rain will water down our beer and our fingers can go numb wrapped around the bottleneck. Maybe I'll drag out every old sheet and blanket, and we'll feast in a sun-soaked playground, listen to a nearby swing set squeak, and I can say I'm happy. Maybe there's a place for me, that I could be there wherever I'd go. Maybe in the clatter of noise, maybe in the slow settling, somewhere in a mismatched silverware drawer, or forgotten in a crawl space, there's a half chance that I don't have to run away to get what I need.
And our next reader is Tori.
This one is called November Doesn't Care About Your Feelings. November is having a tough year, really. Slamming and slapping raindrops against window panes, gray light seeping in double-sheeted windows, less and less. The onslaught of bright, cheery Christmas tunes tear away what's supposed to be her holiday of family and arguments and dry turkey. November doesn't care that the shuffling of the calendar towards Christmas makes you sad in a way you can't really quantify. Shouted words and your dad hunched in a robe, like the discarded exoskeleton of a spider. November doesn't really know what her angst is about. Maybe it is the tragedy in waiting black ice. Strangers eager to put a damn turkey on some poor person's table, but not the rest of the year. That no one appreciates the joy of tearing brown, orange, and gold leaves off of bare tree limbs. The gorgeous death is in the season all around, and she sharpens her claws and takes her region in all its blackness, blowing cold and ice and wind. This one is called, I Actually Do Have Some Change on Me, Sir. I'm Just a Jerk. You see, there is some change somewhere tucked away in my bag. It zipped into my black and white wallet, and it's probably just enough to round out to $2.50 for the bus, plus stray pennies I pull from the sidewalk. Pennies and nickels that don't even make a big difference, but I snatch them wet, oxidized, actual money just puddled on the ground. My compassion's tucked away behind papier-mâché right now. A swirling coldness of water I can't tap into. If I do, it all comes rushing out. I think of the little old lady I brought bedding at the shelter. She couldn't have weighed more much than I did in high school, maybe 80 to 90 pounds, all bones folded into bones, shaking hands that reminded me of my grandmother. I brought bedding to her. She thought about sitting up to make her bed, but just thinking about it looked exhausted. So I tucked her into bed and wanted to cry right there, seeing her frail figure covered in a sheet and thick gray blanket on the floor. I think of the woman who can't speak English, unable to do much except sit at the shelter. At night, she curls up on her mat with a single sheet, her dark springy hair so close to the desk it might be stepped on. The lights blare from the front desk in her sleep, and doors slam and club music pulses from downtown streets. She asks me in Spanish for something, and I'm pretty sure when I bring her a blanket, it is the correct something. I want to tell all these people that it will be okay, there's a place for them, and they'll be fed and clothed and not yelled at or told to leave, but I can't promise them anything. Some emergencies, like weeping black eyes, are worse than the regular one of being homeless. But in my head, it seems that being homeless is always an emergency. I sit at the desk, and each time I have to turn someone away or tell them they've been exited for missing an appointment, the worker bees in my chest dip another strip of newsprint in sticky flour and water, shellac it over my heart, smooth it over, and grab another piece. This is why I didn't give you any change, sir.
So I'm going to talk a minute about our reading series as I make up words. And then we'll go back to the round. So right now we have two readings at the Big Legrowski, which is a great growler bar at Park and Cooch in downtown. One is called the Dudes Poet Society, which is every Monday night at 6 p.m. And it has an open mic. So if you're interested in an open mic, it's at 6 p.m. And it every night, it also has a feature reader. This coming Monday, not tonight, obviously, but next Monday is our one-year anniversary. Yay! We're going to have a big, well, hopefully a big party where we're going to do some Mad Lib kind of poetry, where we're going to have Coen brother movie quote lines, and people are going to be able to create poems from Coen brothers quotes, like F you Donnie and other like The Dude Abides and other things from other Brother Way Out There and other Coen brother movies. And you'll be able to make poems either based on a Coen brothers quote or all of just Coen brothers quotes. And then there'll be our traditional open mic and some other stuff. And then the following week, our feature reader is Eric Fairlayman. Someday I'll learn how to speak. And then the 27th is the second reading or second show for our new series, which is called Neon Dreams, which is at 5 p.m. on the second and fourth Sundays, which I'm looking forward to seeing. And then on the first Tuesday of June is the last version of New Poet Challenge at Pairings Portland Wine Shop, which is at Northeast 24th and Gleason. But we're going to rebirth it as part of Neon Dreams starting on the 24th. So that'll be great. Like I said, it's been a great 3 years of New Poet Challenge, and it's not going to die. It's just going to rebirth as something else as a part of Neon Dreams. And maybe down the line, we're going to be doing some once a year special shows at Pairings. But it's been a fun 3 years, and a lot of great inspirational poets and writers, not just poets, have come through the doors, and it's been a really awesome thing. So I'm going to let Danny go again, and we'll go from there. So here's Danny.
Thanks, Amanda.
Yeah.
This is another untitled one. Summer always sees me drowning. I know I suck at swimming, but I still keep diving into the deep end, or at least trying to dive. But I always land flat, belly flop, air pistol whipped from my chest by the chlorinated whirlpool I voluntarily landed face first into. Literally face first, figuratively face first, mouthful of excuses, forcing themselves deeper, lungs deflating with the volume. I am not a good swimmer. I will always drown when confronted with a deeper end. But I hope that maybe this time I will return to a bigger body of water, that it will fill me with salt instead of poor decisions, and wash me up onto a beach, to be put to the ear of someone else that hates the summer and the crowded pools and people laying them flat in the deep.